Thank you, Dr. Cordera. I'd also like to thank the organizers of this session and the epidemiology section of the APHA for putting this in their list of topics for this meeting. I also thought I would just mention that I had worked as a research assistant in a research group for a few years and saw research being published that didn't have any impact. So when I went off to graduate school, I actually took my master's in public administration and public policy first and then went off and got my PhD because I decided it wasn't worth doing research if it didn't have a focus and if you didn't think it was going to have an impact down the road. So I do have that bias in my work. And have actually been involved in changing one tiny little federal law relating to how the brain tumor data is collected in this country. So I understand the process of the change and understand the need not to do it all by yourself. So I have no conflicts of interest to disclose. As background to this session, the American College of Epidemiology Policy Committee decided to review the translation of epidemiology evidence to policy. They've held a couple of workshops over several years, and this has resulted in some case studies being developed. The framework for the discussions of this committee are published under Dr. Brownson in 2009, where he reflected on the fact that scientific evidence needs to come into the evidence-based policy processes and that the domains of the policy development involve process, content, and outcome, and of course there's other influences on that process that can affect its success. Ross Brownson was building on the work of Dr. Spasoff, who actually published a textbook in health policy and epidemiology in 1999, and he pointed out three key elements in policy development. First of all is choosing which issue and which policy to work on, then developing the strategies for implementation, and once implemented, figuring out a way to evaluate whether or not your policy has been effective. In the field of public health, and I think particularly epidemiology and maybe other scientific disciplines, there are barriers to getting involved in the policy process. And the first one is isolation from the process. And the picture that I'm showing you is an artist who's collecting samples in Iceland for an exhibit. And sometimes we work in this kind of isolation, not understanding the process of policy and not having the skills to impact the process. And some of us just simply don't want to get involved in something as complex and messy as processing policy. But the most important facilitation of policy development is communication. And scientists can play a role in communication. We have many more ways to communicate than just publishing peer-reviewed journals now than ever before. And so communication in some ways is an easier job than it has been in the past. We know that policy moves forward by defining the problem, developing a policy to solve the problem, and then understanding the roles of politics and public opinion in that process. In terms of where does science and epidemiology fit into that process, it's probably mostly in that first step in the definition of the problem. But there's no reason why we can't also play a role, and some people do, in the politics and public opinion, particularly through communicating the evidence that we generate. So in reflection after the workshops, we discussed the lessons learned, and most of our discussion was really on the process that took place. And so we came up with five areas that we thought were thematically identified in our case studies. And the first one was placing a high priority on one specific factor, learning how to tell the story from the epidemiology evidence, developing a strong multidisciplinary team. Once you have the team in place, reaching a consensus with stakeholders and using those stakeholders, and considering the political and social environment as you strategize. And I'd just like to make a few comments about each of these before we turn the session over to specific examples. First of all, the emphasis was on focusing on one issue. And having an issue that has compelling epidemiology evidence to support the issue. If you have that, it allows advocacy groups to mobilize around the issue, and it prevents you from wasting your time, prevents dilution of energy and effort and digression away from the issue. The use of epidemiology evidence can come from different directions. And what we noticed was sometimes descriptive epidemiology can be quite strong impetus for change. When behaviors have not been previously demonstrated, or there's new evidence on risk factors that emerge, or when weak associations are at play, we really need complex study designs to come to bear in the evidence. We also noticed that there's a short-term versus a long-term tension in terms of the evidence. We know that it takes a long time to conduct population observational studies or trials, and yet policy questions often come up and policymakers want an answer overnight. And so there is a tension. We probably can't solve this tension, but it does challenge us to be thoughtful in the work that we do take on. Developing a team strategy allows us to develop a broad community of stakeholders, and if one has a team, then you can use those key individuals on your team to be your eyes and ears on the issue at hand. And if you have those eyes and ears out giving you different perspectives on an issue, you're in a better position to evaluate and to adjust your strategy for change. And of course, then that teamwork can go into reaching a consensus on the priorities and strategy for change. And you don't have to do it yourself. If you've got a team together, it multiplies the labor going in to engage the stakeholders in the topic. It gives you multiple perspectives on the issue, and it improves the story you have to tell because of those multiple perspectives, and it allows you to broaden and change the story as you gain more information from different stakeholders. The political and communication environments are always there, and one cannot always address them. They're situational. They're critical to the success of policy going forward, and they're somewhat unpredictable. And I put in this picture from an article in The Grocer in July 2012 because one of the case studies that we did was around the Salt Reduction Initiative, where the New York State Health Department got a lot of industry to sign on to an agreement to reduce the amount of salt in their products. But in fact, even though they signed the agreement, there was a surveillance and a report done indicating that the companies were not reaching the targets that they had agreed upon. So there's always unpredictable things that interfere with your strategy going forward. We realized as we were having these discussions that most of us had been trained in an era when policy was not discussed in training programs. And so there are needs for epidemiologists to be trained in new methodology that's emerging that affects policy development. But we also need our students to get experiences and collaborations outside of the discipline so that they are better communicators of the discipline. And they also need to have experience in the training programs at learning how to tell the story from epidemiology data. It will help them to ask better questions and to frame solutions. And because it's not just good enough to include training in the current academic programs, we need to think about continuing education for those of us who have not been formally trained in policy processes. So what do we want to gain from training? Well, we want those who elect to get involved in any stage of the policy process to understand that process and what stage they're involved in, and so that researchers can focus concretely on developing impactful questions when they make a decision about how to spend their research time. I don't think we are trying to develop masters of change. I think we're trying to have people understand the change process and become a member of the team of change. So here is the first set of case studies that were published in the Annals of Epidemiology in 2010, volume 20, if you'd like to look them up for your reference purposes. And these are the topics of the second set of case studies that were published this summer, also in the Annals of Epidemiology. And so I would just leave you with these lessons learned and ask you to ponder them as you listen to the speakers going forward present their case studies. Thank you again for attending the session, and I look forward to a thoughtful and provoking discussion.